Dan Lane is going to be speaking to us this morning, and Dan came to Bethlehem as a college student, met his wife Colleen here, and they raised their four children here at Bethlehem. Along the way, he's been involved in a lot of different ministries, including missions, being an elder, as well as being part of the Financial and Property Administrators and the Helping Hand Fund. He has been very involved in helping people with their finances and has led several classes and counsels with people individually about once a week concerning their financial situations. He's worked as a part of the Bethlehem staff for many years and currently works with a firm that consults with institutional investors worldwide. And Dan has just mentioned to me personally how excited he is and how much of a desire he has to share with us the importance of being financial stewards at an early time in our marriages and lives and just how important that is. So I'm super excited for what Dan has to say, and I'll pray really quick for him. Father God, I just thank you for Dan and his desire to share his wisdom and knowledge with us here, and I pray that you will just speak through him, use his words to encourage us, and thank you for him and him being here this morning. In your name, amen.
It is I am very excited whenever I have, can you guys all hear okay? God, I can't hear anything. I am very excited whenever I get a chance to talk to people, I'll say under 30, but also under 40, or wherever you guys happen to be, or under 50. I can tell you that I talk to people of all ages, and it's more challenging when you're talking to people in their 50s or 60s who have kind of a lot of difficulties and so forth, because they kind of have a lot of issues behind them, and they've been maybe doing some things. Is it not working? I got to get closer. Sorry. Turn it up. I'll stand. Now I can hear it. I didn't think I could hear it. Okay. All right. So I'm always very excited when I can speak with younger people, because even if you are kind of messed up, there's lots of time in front of you to get things straightened out, and you have a long runway in front of you. So I have been asked to speak to you this morning on the topic contentment in Christ and our finances. So there's a lot of possible directions we could go in this topic. And you may be aware that the Bible has really a lot of things to say about money and possessions, and actually gives us a lot of good and clear and helpful direction. In talking about contentment, or I like to use the word peace, having contentment or peace in our finances, I don't want to simply give you a message about, well, you should just trust God or just believe that God loves you, that kind of a thing. Of course, it's true that God loves you. And I would also add that it's your money and your finances are not the most important thing in your life. Your most important thing in your life is your relationship with God and loving him and loving other people. There's a lot of things more important than money, but if you've had times when you have been under financial stress, it can seem like money is the most important thing in your life, and you can know how big it can get to be. And it can take care of your, it can take over your life. It can make it seem like there isn't anything else you can think about if you're really under the pile. So what I want to talk to you about this morning is developing ways, kind of giving an overview. There's a lot of classes. There's classes that that are held at Bethlehem. We have one going at the North Campus right now that goes for many weeks. I'm not going to have time to go into a lot of that stuff this morning, but we're going to kind of go do a flyover of several things in terms of developing plans and then how to get out from under that pile if you are there. You've probably also heard that when people get divorced and they cite reasons, the number one reason for people ending up getting divorced is money problems. That's always the top one. And even for people who don't get divorced, like hopefully all of us, you can still have a lot of stress in your life sometimes, just by money problems and so forth. So it can cause a lot of difficulties. So not the most important thing in our lives, but it can be a big problem sometimes. So my goal in working with people is to help them develop ways and organization of how they handle their resources and the whole issue of money, so that it becomes more of a thing in the background of your life and not the central thing that is dominating your life. And you can get to a place, the goal is to get people to places where they really understand what's going on, they have an organized plan, everything can kind of just run like clockwork, and it's almost an afterthought, okay? That's the goal that you really want to work to. And just to take the drama and the stress out of your life. And it happens that there are really a lot of biblical principles that really lay this out for us also. It's not that it has every specific instruction on how much, you know, what we should spend everything on, but there's a lot of biblical principles that we can follow in terms of laying out a strategy. So that's kind of where I want to go with this morning. Like I said, we don't have a ton of time, but we'll touch on the surface of some of these things. Before I start, I wanted to tell you a couple stories. I've talked individually, just one-on-one with singles and couples, with more than 2,000 people. So I've had a lot of conversations, and I have a lot of stories. So I'm going to tell you a couple of those. One, I'll tell you somebody that I talked to last month, and I'm going to call this person Bob. Bob is 65 years old, and he's a college graduate. He has worked as a professional his whole life for, you know, more than 40 years. The last couple years, he's had a little bit more of some health issues. He worked for companies for a long time, and then about 10 years ago, he decided to become self-employed in what he does, and he's been having a little bit of trouble with that lately. So he started to have some financial difficulties. So he asked if he could talk to me. So I talked to him last month, and he said that he decided that he wanted to start taking Social Security. You kind of, when you get up to that age, you kind of decide you can take it any time between 62 and 70, you can start taking it. So he decided he wanted to start taking it. So actually this month he's going to get his first payment. He's going to get $1,800 a month. So he's going to get $1,800 a month. Right now, his regular business has kind of dried up, so he's been working for a nonprofit for like less than 10 hours a week, just trying to earn some extra money. So he makes a couple hundred dollars a month doing that. So his expenses right now are about in the range of maybe $2,200, $2,300. So he's going to start getting this Social Security. And I asked him how much he had in retirement savings and so forth. And what he said was, this is somebody who's 65, who's been, you know, had 40 years to work on this. He has an IRA with about $10,000 in it. So, and if you don't know, $10,000 is not very much money. And right now, he's really, really depending on that Social Security, which is $1,800. And that doesn't even cover what his expenses are. His expenses are about $2,300 or something. So we talked about what he could do and how he could maybe increase his income a little bit. So I won't give you any more details about that other than to say that I don't want any of you, and there's no reason why any of you should end up like Bob. Okay, he's in a really hard situation. And he's 65 and he's single, and he could live 15 or 20 more years, and it's going to be really hard for him. So that's one story, just to encourage you. I'll tell you another story about a woman I talked to. This is a couple years ago. Her name, I'll call her Barbara. Barbara was 74 years old when I talked to her. She had been a widow for 8 years. So when she was 66, her husband died. And when her husband died, they lived in a house. The house was worth over $300,000. It was over $300,000 house, and it was completely paid for. It was all paid, no mortgage, no nothing. In addition to that, her husband had accumulated about $350,000 in retirement funds. So that's pretty good. And she received Social Security payments of about $2,200 a month. So I don't know what kind of husband she had, but as far as financial provision, he did a good job. You know, a house paid off, she had enough savings and so forth. And with Social Security, she should have been fine for the rest of her life. She called me, and I talked to her. So this is 8 years later now, and she explained her situation to me. The $350,000 in retirement funds that her husband had left her was all gone. She had nothing left. The house that she lived in that had been completely paid for, she had taken out mortgages on. She'd taken out a lot of mortgages, like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth, and she was not able to make the payments. She was 6 months behind on the payments on her mortgage. And the bank was starting to harass her, saying, you need to get caught up or we're going to foreclose on you. Her mortgage payment was $2,800 a month. And if you remember, her Social Security payment was $2,200 a month. That's the only source of income she had. So what do you think I was able to tell Barbara? Not much. I said, Barbara, you need to start planning for the next place that you're going to live because you're going to lose your house. So now that's a tragic, and you have all kinds of questions like, what did she do? So, and I don't need to give you all those details, but Barbara was foolish, okay? And she got in a real bad situation. Now, the thing with both of these people, and I can tell you, I've spoken with hundreds of people like them, is that they didn't understand their situation and they didn't have a plan. I can tell you other people I've spoken with. I can tell you about a guy that he's about 45 years old. He was like a plumber or something. And his business had really gone down. And so he started using some credit cards to make up for it because he thought his business was going to come back. But then his business didn't come back because he was just kind of in a crisis time. And the credit cards got more and more, and then he started to fall behind on his mortgage. And so he called me up one day. He was very stressed out. And he said he had a 10-year-old son that he really, really felt he was failing. And he told me that he had a $250,000 life insurance policy and that he was thinking of taking his life because he thought, I think my son would be better off without... You know, and I mean, he was suicidal. So money, you know, we don't want to over-spiritualize it, but if we don't take care of it, it can cause a lot of problems in our life. Okay? There's another man that I had many conversations with him. He desperately wanted my help because they bought a house that was too big, and then they had fallen behind, and they couldn't make it up, and he was in trouble, and he was afraid he was going to lose his house, and he was so afraid. He said, I think my wife is going to leave me if I don't figure this out and get this fixed. He was very stressful. I've talked with a lot of divorce situations, a lot of just disastrous situations. There have been people in this church who come to worship services who love God, who read their Bibles, who have lost their homes to foreclosure. That has happened to families in this church. Maybe you know some people. I talked with one young woman, not this wasn't a person from our church, but she grew up in a home, and this was a few years ago, but her family was evicted from their home by their bank on Christmas Eve. So there can be some real scarring things that can happen when we have our finances not in good order. So I can say this very simply. I can be completely confident that it applies to every person here, every family here, that everybody needs to understand what your financial situation is very clearly. It says in Proverbs, know well the condition of your flocks. It's of course, a metaphor of just knowing what's going on. You need to know what's going on and have a plan. You don't need to be a math major. You don't have to be a genius. But you do need to know the details, either yourself or you and your husband together or whatever it is. You need to know the details. You need to have a plan, and you need to follow that plan. And to the extent that you do that, things are going to go better for you. And to the extent that you neglect that, things are going to go harder for you. That's just the way it works. That's just the way it is. Okay? So, money isn't the most important thing in your life. Again, your relationship with God is. But it can be a pretty big deal, and it can really become a bigger deal, you know, if things start to go south. So, I don't want to merely scare you with these stories, but I do want you to understand the importance of having a plan and being organized. And what can follow that is having peace in your life and having contentment when things are in good order. Nothing that I've said, none of these things has to happen to anybody here. There's no reason why any of those things should happen to any of you guys, okay? And the Bible gives us lots of direction. And I can tell you that if we follow those things, it isn't always easy, but I can tell you that it works every time. It always works. So, I also want you to know, just hopefully I'm not freaking anybody out here, but I also want you to know that you have a Father in heaven, and he knows there's a lot of different situations here. He knows how many hairs are on each one of your heads. He knows everything about you. He knows your hopes. He knows your fears. He knows your dreams. He's powerful, and he's rich. And he said that if you were ever hungry, he wouldn't come and ask you for food, because all the grain on all the farms on all the earth belong to him, right? All the birds and all the trees, the beasts of the field, the cattle on a thousand hills. He said, the silver is mine, the gold is mine, everything belongs to God. And he gives us stuff to manage. We're his managers of things that belong to him. And we have different, there's different amounts of things maybe that we have. I've talked to people who have made $20,000 a year and have had really organized, full, satisfying, productive, great lives. I've talked with a lot of people who have made more than $250,000 a year who were disasters, and they were out of control, and their lives were chaos. So it isn't how much we make, but it's how we manage what we have. And it's really important that you understand that. It's managing what you have, and that's part of contentment also, is being content with what we have. All right? In Matthew 24, Jesus talked for a long time about the signs of his return, what's going to happen, and so forth. And then into Matthew 25, he told three stories, or three parables, okay? The first story that he told was about 10 young women. You guys are probably familiar with this. 10 young women who went to a wedding feast, and five of them were wise, and five of them were foolish, right? Their lamps went out, and then they had to go back and find more oil, and then they missed out on the wedding feast. They were locked out. So that story is about planning and about preparation and being wise, right? The third story in Matthew 25 talks about judgment at the end of the age. It said at the end of the age, the Son of Man will come with all his angels, and he's going to separate everybody. Like a farmer separates the sheep and the goats, and he's going to put some people on one side and some people on the other. And what is going to be the criterion? He talks about all these things about helping the poor and feeding the hungry and visiting prisoners and all these kinds of things. And he says, what's the difference between the people that go on the right or the left? It's what they did or what they didn't do. That's the criterion. So we have this first story about preparation with the young women. We have this last story about the judgment at the end of the age. And what do we have in the middle of Matthew 25? We have a story about that we call the parable of the talents. And a master went away on a journey, and he left three of his servants. He left one of them with five talents, one with two, and one with one. And he went away, and he expected them to be productive with him. Now, of course, this story is an analogy that Jesus was telling about us. And God is the master who has left us with resources to manage, right? And so the master comes back, and what happens? The one with five talents produced five more, and he said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. I'll put you in charge of many." The same thing happened with the one with two talents. So notice that it wasn't how rich or how much a person produced. It was how they handled what they had. The one who had five talents handled it well, and he produced five more. The one with two, same thing. And the one with one talent, as you know, he didn't handle it well. And what happened? The master became very angry with him. He became very angry. So there's no reason for us to expect that God won't be angry with us if we don't handle our resources well. We have no reason not to think that. So who are we? We are the people in the middle parable. And we need to manage the resources that the master has given us. How do we do that? We don't have an exact blueprint in the Bible in terms of how to develop an exact budget, right? There's a lot of things that the Bible doesn't give us specific directions on. We need to avoid debt. If we're in debt, we need to get out of it. We have to have a plan for how we're going to go forward. So I should have put these on the tables ahead of time, but I have some handouts. And what I wanted to do was maybe just go through these kind of quickly. Thank you. So what we're going to do, I'm not going to go into huge detail about this, but I wanted to leave you with something to give a little bit of an overview of some of the things I'm talking about, and you can take this with you. And like I mentioned at the beginning, we're just kind of scratching the surface on a lot of these things. So I have about four handouts here, and I stapled them all together. And so what I would like to do is go over these kind of briefly, kind of quickly, and then if you guys have any questions, I would be happy to talk with you. So the first thing is this: the top page says Compass Spending Plan. Compass is just a Christian ministry that helps people develop good plans for their finances. So the first four pages of this is, it's a way of categorizing all of your financial activity in your life. So let me take a step back and just talk a little bit about what the overall goal of how do you get to financial peace or financial contentment or security. I would argue that the way that you get to it is you have to, like I said, you have to know the condition of your flocks, you have to know what your situation is. And the way that you do that is you really have to have specific information. You have to know everything that's going on. Otherwise, things that are out here on the periphery or maybe right in front of you, they can take over and they can cause a lot of problems. So when I first sit down and talk with people, what I say to them is I want to see a record of all of your sources of income that you have on a monthly basis. And I want to see a record of all the things that you spend money on. And we have all the income on one side, and we have all the expenditures on the other side. And those two things, they have to kind of match, right? If you have more expenditures than you have income, then you're going backwards, and that's called debt. And debt equals bad, okay? You can't spend more. If you can do that for a while, and you can use credit cards, but eventually you have to stop doing that, and then you're in trouble. And eventually you have to turn that around and you have to get out of that hole. So the whole idea behind how we organize ourselves is you have to have specific information about all the details in your life. And the more specific you are, the more helpful it's going to be. Because there's a lot of things that go on in our lives. There's a lot of expenses and just things that happen, and you really have to know all those. So the better you understand them, the better you will be able to develop a plan. So some people call this is called a spending plan. It's just another name for a budget. And what it means is you have to have money in all your different categories so that you can pay the bills that you have to pay each month. So for example, if you get paid twice a month and if your rent is $500, then each of your paychecks, you should take $250 out of each of your paychecks and you set that aside so that when your rent is due, then you have the money to pay rent, okay? That's what we need to do with everything in our financial lives. And beyond that, we need to have margin in our lives. So you can't just spend everything that comes in. Now, I'll tell you something. One of the reasons I became real passionate about this maybe 10 or 12 years ago is because my wife and I, we have four children, we didn't necessarily follow this real closely. I didn't really get into financial trouble with a lot of debt and everything, but I could have done a lot better. I could have been much more intentional than I was for the first 20 years, or, you know, from age 25 to 45 or something. So part of what gets me excited when I get to talk to younger people is that you do a better job at this than I did, because the sooner you get on a plan like this to be in control of your finances and really directing your money where to go, knowing where everything's happening. And then what you do is you have to have margin, meaning you don't spend everything in your life. And that margin is called savings, right? You don't spend it, you're going to save it. And there's kind of a few different kinds of savings. First of all, you want to have enough savings so that if some emergency happens, like a car repair or your water heater goes out or something like that, that you can handle it. Now, for years, my wife and I, we never did that. And whenever I had a car repair, I just had to use a credit card. And then it took me 3 or 4 months or whatever to pay off the credit card, which was a drag. And I just did that like over and over and over. Like, it really surprised me that the car broke down. You know, it's like I just thought it was going to work forever. Of course your car is going to break down. So the first thing you do is you develop a pot of savings, you know, maybe $1,000 or $3,000, something that can cover some of those emergencies. Then the second thing is you want to grow that savings to a larger amount. The experts will say try to develop your savings into 3 to 6 months of all your expenses. And part of the rationale behind that is if a person were to lose their job, for example, if they had 6 months of savings to cover all their expenses, that they lose their job, you've got 6 months to find a new job, and you don't have to be all stressed out about, you know, you're going to get kicked out of your house in a week or something, okay? So first of all, saving for emergencies. Second of all, saving for, you know, maybe losing a job or possibly saving for a car, things like that, for bigger purchases. And then thirdly, the ultimate savings is, of course, saving for retirement. The reason why it's exciting to talk to younger people is because you have a lot of time to save for retirement. Your income that you receive is really your income is the way that you can develop wealth in your life. By having your income, by spending less than you make, and by putting aside money, and the more you can put aside and the longer time period that you can let that work, the better it's going to be for you. Now, one of the things that I put in here, let's see. Okay, the second thing, and I'm not going to read through this, but there's this little story called A Tale of Two Savers. And basically what that is, and some of you may have heard some kind of story like this before, but it explains the value of starting earlier and saving for a really long time. Okay, so you can read that when you get home or read it over with your husband or whatever. I'll tell you a couple stories. One story is I have a friend who is a mailman. He was in the Army when he was a young man, and then he got out, and he went back to college, and then he was an assistant manager at Walgreens for a while, then he was unemployed for a while, and then he finally got a job with the Postal Service, and so he's been a letter carrier for the last 30 years. But one of the things that he did when he was in the Army, somehow he started savings, and every month he put like a couple hundred dollars into his Vanguard whatever fund. And he did that, and he always did that. He never neglected doing that. He was super faithful about it. Even times when he was like unemployed, he still tried to put money in every month out of savings into this. So flash forward, here's somebody who's a mailman. At age 61, he told me that he was now a millionaire. Okay, so you never know who's delivering your mail. But that's just an example of, it's not like you have to be a vice president of 3M or something to develop a lot of wealth. What it takes, and you guys have the opportunity to do this for another 30 years, is you put money aside. My wife and I had dinner last night with a friend of mine from high school. He's same age as me. He is on staff with CREW, with Campus Crusade. He has been for 30 years. And he told me that he was really, when he started off in his early 20s, he was just worried about what would happen later on in life, and he didn't think Social Security was going to be there or anything, so he just started putting stuff aside. He put a little bit aside. He makes about $40,000 a year. That's all he's made for forever. You know, he doesn't make a lot of money, but he's always put money aside, and it's put it in investments and stuff. And so last night I'm like, so how much is your pot? You know, how much is it? Because of course I got to know, because this is what I talk to people about. And he said, well, it's $889,000. So that's almost $1 million. He's 57 years old, and he's going to keep working for a few more years. So here's somebody who's, you know, maybe your local campus outreach staff person is just pecking money away, you know? It can happen. So you don't have to be, I don't mean to insult anybody, you don't have to be brilliant, you don't have to make a ton of money, you just have to be faithful in putting it away, being consistent, and you never touch it. Don't take out 401k loans and don't do any of that stuff. You set it in for a long time. That's what this Tale of Two Savers is about. Okay, the other sheet, let's see, the personal net worth worksheet, that's just something that you can look at if you want to. And what I like to let people know is what you're really trying to do is you're trying to build your personal net worth. Now, that's just, it means what your assets minus your liabilities equals your worth. So if you have school loans or if you have credit card debt or something, that works against you. And you want to try to develop your net worth. So anyway, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that right now. Then the last sheet is just something I copied off. I guess I copied that off the Compass website also. It's kind of a roadmap to financial freedom. So and you'll see there that step number one, like I was mentioning, save $1,000 for emergency, start using budget, begin giving. And then you can just see it can kind of go through the steps. Right now, we're doing a Dave Ramsey class at the North Campus, and Kristen is in that class with me. We have about 36 people, I think, on our roster right now. In a class like that, we go through for 9 weeks, and we go into a lot of detail about all these things that we've been talking about. So if you have an opportunity at some point in the future to go through something like that or to interact with some people about that I would really commend that to you. But to the extent that if you're wherever you're at on your journey on either having a plan or not having a plan, I really encourage you to move forward, and the sooner you do it, the sooner things can improve for you if it's a struggle. And even if it's not a struggle, I had a person last year who was who is very wealthy, who came to, I did a Dave Ramsey class last year, a year ago, and he had lots of money. But he went through the class and he just said, he realized that he could be doing so much better because he wasn't very organized. He just made enough money to be sloppy. And so he didn't have to be really careful. And he just spent as much money as he wanted to on Christmas presents, you know, just stuff like that, ate out when he wanted to. But he goes, oh, I could have done so much more. I could have done so much better. So this isn't just for somebody who's like in dire straits or about to lose your house. This is for everybody. And the better that we can manage things, then we're going to have that contentment. Because, like I said, it's going to be something just in the background of your life. You know, every paycheck I put, you know, so I have a phone bill every month, so about $125. So $65 of my first paycheck and then $65 of my second paycheck go into this little bucket that is to pay my phone bill. And when my phone bill comes, I pay my phone bill. And I never think about, am I going to be able to pay my phone bill? I never worry about it. It's not even a blip on my mind anywhere. And that's how it is with almost everything in my financial life, because it's just all in the background. And if a person is overwhelmed by this, then you're not really going to have emotional energy to help people. If you're broke, you're not really going to be able to feed hungry people. You know, broke people can't be very generous. So maybe the last thing that I would say, just to clarify, I really like having people work at developing your wealth so that you can ultimately, the ultimate goal to me is to for you guys to get to a point in your life where you don't have to work for a paycheck anymore. I don't want you to ever stop working, but you don't have to have a paycheck to support you because you've become self-sufficient. So the purpose of that, I don't want people just to become a millionaire just so that you can live an extravagant lifestyle, but it's so that we can live a life of service and not have the kind of stress that can be so, you know, really epidemic with many, many people because we're not organized and because we don't have a plan. So maybe that's enough. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions they want to ask? If I'm asked, I've talked to like five or six pastors and elders, and they're like, I would love to. The answer is the question. Yeah, I hope to be able to do that sometime soon. I did it on Wednesdays North last year, and I didn't like it because it was too confusing. There's too much chaos, and it's nicer to have a dedicated night, and then that's all we're doing. We're coming to here, and if we want to spend an hour and a half or 2 hours, you know, we try to do it less than 2 hours, but yeah. So I think it's nice to do it on a different night, not a night when there's a lot of other stuff going on or people are, I got to go pick up my kids or whatever. So, yeah. So the question was, and this is she said she's on support, and sometimes the support might fluctuate. And this is also true of some people who may be self-employed, for example. You can really go great guns all through the summer months and make tons of money, and then in the winter months, sometimes people who are self-employed, it can get a little more thin. So yes, there are ways of doing that, and it's a little more challenging, but it can absolutely be done. And what really has to be done is you have to know. And again, this is all about having really good, the better information you can have for yourself, the more it's going to be helpful. But having a really good understanding of what does it cost for us to live on a monthly basis. And so I'll just make up a number. Let's say it costs $2,000 a month to live on a monthly basis. And let's say through the summer months, you have a lawn service and you make, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a month all through the, you know, through 4 or 5 summer months. Now in the winter, nobody wants their lawn mowed, so you don't make anything. You know, you make $500 shoveling snow or something. What you have to do is you have to understand what your overall income is for the whole year and you have to save in it's as simple as Joseph in Egypt. You have to save in those months where you have more so that you can manage things in the months where you have less. But it's knowing what your cycle is, and if you see ahead that we're not going to have enough, then you have to make some adjustments. You either have to spend less or you have to figure out how to make some more money doing something else, or you go do work at a store, you know, whatever it is. Okay. Yep. Yeah, it's free. And there's like lots and lots of free information if you just want to look something up. Compass is a Christian organization. It has lots of articles and lots of different exercises and spreadsheets and so forth you can look at. Crown Financial is another one. The Dave Ramsey site has a lot of things. And apart from that, there are a lot of, you know, just there are government sites, there are secular sites that just have a, I think somebody was telling me the other day, I think there's something called budget.com or something that they like to use. So there's DIY, there's YNAB, there's Mint. Yeah, there's a lot of different things. But one thing that I would, you know, find something that really works for you. And if it works for you to have it all on paper, because that's how you like to do things, that's fine. If you're really into spreadsheets, that's great. But if spreadsheets freak you out, you don't have to do it on a spreadsheet. There's a lot of different ways that you can do it. But the important thing is you have to spend less than you make, you have to save, and you have to start accruing in these accounts like we were talking about. I think, I suppose I would want to know how secure the pension was. Are you for sure going to get that pension? Some pensions go belly up. I mean, that would be one thing. I would want to know, I mean, you can project out and say, well, okay, so when I'm 65, they can give you projections of what, like, well, what will I get from my pension? It's like, well, you'll get $800 a month. It's like, okay, and what will you get from Social Security? You'll get this much. And then if you add those up and you say, wow, it's going to give me $1,500 a month, I mean, that's nice, but that's not enough to live on. So that's what you really have to know. You have to know, and then you have to kind of, and you can maybe figure this out on your own, or you can talk to somebody about, well, what will it cost to live at my lifestyle 30 years from now? And will your house be paid off so you don't have a mortgage? You know, so there's a lot of different factors that kind of go in. But I would always, anybody who wanted to save more, I would always encourage you to save more. Because once you spend money, then it's gone and you don't have it anymore. But if you save it, you can always spend it later, right? You can always spend it later. So, you know, being more conservative is, you know, in my mind, it's not a bad route to go. So I would try and do as much as you can. But, you know, you want to have a life also. So, yeah. So you have a couple thousand dollars and but you want to have access to the money. Okay. Well, so then there's a whole bunch of things that it's hard to answer that real quickly, because it kind of you kind of have to say, well, are you like a person who is really like a gambler, that I have a high risk tolerance. It's like, you know what? I'll throw this into Bitcoin, and if I lose it all, I tried, you know. Or you say, no, I can't lose the money, I can't lose the money. Then you say, you know what, just leave it in the bank. So that's a first thing. A second thing might be, well, what might the money eventually get used for? Is it going to get used for a college education for your baby, you know, something like that? So it's like, okay, well, then you have about a 15-year time horizon or 18 years or something. So then there might be some things that are appropriate for that length of time. If you wanted it for a down payment on a house and you were hoping to buy a house in, say, 3 or 4 years, and it's like, well, okay, we could take a little risk, but we don't want to take too much risk because you don't want to lose it because your real intention is to put a down payment on a house. So there's a bunch of things that, you know, you kind of have to, that I would have to know before I would just kind of flip it out. But yeah, so, but there's lots of possibilities. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So, yep, as said in, as like the Ten Commandments or the Seven Commandments, yeah. These are not the Seven Commandments. So the question was, I'll just repeat it, can you make any little deviations when you're following this roadmap to financial freedom? And my answer to that is, I have talked to people, and sometimes I have said, yeah, I think that makes sense. And I will also say that for me myself, I have deviated from it some. And one notable example I could give you is, if you work at a place and they have a retirement plan, and if you put money into it, you get a match for it. So it's like free money. You know what I'm talking about? So that really maybe doesn't come, I don't even know where that is on this map. Yeah, so, right. So, like, step five is, like, begin investing. I don't know, is that before, anywhere before that? Yeah, it doesn't really talk about investing for retirement before step five, but to me, it's just like, wow, that's just, like, free money. If I don't take it, I'm just giving it up. So I have done that even ahead of some of the other steps, and I've advised other people to do that, too. I think if you follow these, you're not going to be in a bad way. I mean, it's okay. But if you wanted to do some of that, the biggest things are if you have, like, credit card debt or if you're spending more than you make, I mean, that's what really has to end, you know, immediately. And you got to get rid of that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't want people investing, people that have 20%, you know, interest balances on credit cards, I wouldn't tell them to put money into their retirement account. I would say, no, get rid of that credit card balance first. I mean, that's one of the main things. But, yeah. Versus what? Yeah. Now, that's a good question. So that's where I like this net worth worksheet that I didn't really go into. The net worth worksheet, so you have, let's say, for example, you have a house that's worth $200,000 and you owe $150,000 on it and you really are motivated to pay down your mortgage and so you're trying to get rid of that. When you fill out a net worth worksheet, the $200,000 is an asset that you own and then the $150,000 is a liability. Does that make sense? And also your student loan is a liability. So the student loan counts against you, your mortgage counts against you, and as you make progress against either of those, you increase your net worth. And so I think that I like to have a focus on increasing your net worth. Now, if your student loans were 12% and your mortgage was 3%, I would say get rid of your student, you know, if they're both the same, then I still think it's nice to get, it's an orthodox way of thinking about it normally is that they like to advise you to get rid of your smallest loans as fast as you can. Because sort of psychologically or spiritually or emotionally or whatever, when you get rid of a loan and it's out of your life, that just is really a nice thing. So even though it's a little balance, it's just nice to, you know, you had 7 debts, now you have 5 debts. So, but that's, you know, that's something that you can decide. Jeanette?
What are your thoughts on a certified financial planner?
It's kind of a level of, so the question was, do you like to use a certified financial planner or just do it yourself? I do things myself, but I have a high level of comfort with it, and I know a lot of information. And so I think that's, it kind of comes down to that. There's a lot of free resources, obviously, online that you can use. You can sit down, you can go to seminars, or you can sit down and talk with financial planners sometimes and have them talk to you, and you can decide if you want to go with their advice or not, and they'll give you lots of information. So it's kind of up to you. Usually when you do invest with somebody, then they're going to charge you a management fee. You know, it might be 1% of your assets. Whereas if you did that on your own, and if you could do just as well as they do, then you're 1% ahead. So if you have a 1% higher return over 20 years, then that can add up to a lot of money. So it's kind of like that. But if you really don't know what you're doing, or you don't want to be hassled with it, or you're not comfortable with it, then there's certainly nothing wrong with using financial planners. You know, they can give you a lot of good information. That good? Okay, anybody else? Yes. Yeah. Sure. That's a good question, and it's hard for me to answer that question in a big group just for an individual person, because I would sit down and talk with a person on that, and for different people it may be different in terms of what they are looking to do or wanting to do, or how far along they are, their level of comfort, a lot of things. But I love what you're saying about the ultimate goal of this is to be generous people, and to have, you know, to not have worries about our finances. All along the way, I suppose I should say, goes without saying, but I should say it, that of course we're always giving all through this process. We don't wait till we're 60 before we start giving. We're giving all along the way. But to answer your question about are there groups right now, I would love to have 100 people like you who just say, man, I've got so much money. What am I going to do with all this? You know, that would be... Right. But that would be great. We have had some initiatives. There have been some things that some of the pastors have done in the past. There's a thing called Generous Churches, whatever, organization or something. And so they have, I don't know how much they have targeted some people in the church. So a little bit of that has gone on. My work is more with people who, I'm part of the Helping Hand Committee. So I get to talk to a lot of people who are kind of maybe having a little bit of struggle. So that's more where my focus is, and getting people like you guys started so that you're on a good path, so that exactly that you can be to that point. But you guys could be self-sufficient by the time you're 50 if you really went after it. So good. Thank you.